The Williamstown Film Festival returns for its 15th season. Oh, my God, are we all getting old? A 15th season for 5 days of cinematic bliss. The festival will run October 30th through November 3rd. On the schedule, 30 films, many of them premieres, more than a half dozen parties, that's seven between you and me, and events at Massmocha and Williams College and the Clark Art Institute and Images Cinema. And to tell us more, we welcome the men behind it all. Steve Lawson, the executive director of the Williamstown Film Festival, and Joe Finnegan, president of the Williamstown Film Festival Board. Is that still correct?
That is still correct.
Okay, excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you
very
much.
Held on, you've held on to your title.
We'll see after the show.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the people at the top over there in Williamstown change rather quickly, so I just had to make sure.
Oh, got that in. It's a different festival.
And Sandra Thomas of Images Cinema is with us as well. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Good morning,
Hello.
Joe.
I welcome you all, and it's wonderful to have you all here. So, Steve, my God, 15 years, and it's hard to believe it's been that long, but this is a festival that has certainly grown and found its place.
I think so. When you consider how tiny we were at the very beginning, in 1999, we had five films in 2 days. And now, as you say, we've grown like Topsy. And I think one reason we flourished is that we didn't start big and then sort of have the opportunity to tank. We basically have just added sort of gradually an element every year, basically.
And what would you say the element is this year?
I think the element is that I think there's a certain accessibility to the schedule. I'm not saying we're pandering or anything like that, but there are films that I think have a real appeal to a large cross-section of people. You know, not that we are shying away from difficult material. I think some of the material is difficult, but I think Sandra can speak to this too. I think there is a certain openness and maybe a warmth is the wrong word to the season that I think people are I've heard the buzz they find appealing even though they haven't seen the films yet.
Right, I think the season, every film is only shown one time, so everyone has an experience together, and there's a nice variety of comedic films, documentary, and late night horror films that appeal to a broad audience. And that's what we want to draw. We want to draw into people who love film and who are also interested in checking out a festival and learning what a festival is about.
So, Joe, what do you consider the audience to be of the people that you're ultimately gearing this toward?
Well, it's interesting, Joe. I think we looked at the data a couple of years ago and we noticed a lot of the local moviegoers who go to Images all the time don't always get to the film festival. And so Sandra had the challenge of booking a theater 52 weeks a year, and Steve had the challenge of booking a theater 1 weekend a year or 2 weekends a year a couple years ago, and we've sort of brought them both together, you know, taking a better look at our audience as opposed to maybe scheduling around what we like and scheduling a little bit more about what they like and inviting them all in to have a discussion. And I think it's started last year, and it's spreading out even more this year with the different conversations we're going to have next week.
And I guess I'm curious as to, Sandra, how it all comes together and ultimately helps film and helps people and develop your audience.
Sure.
For the rest of the year.
Well, festivals, there are a gazillion festivals these days, but festivals provide this very focused, concentrated time that people watch film together in kind of a celebratory environment rather than going to a movie on a Friday night with your friends. It's much more of an event, and it creates a vibe and it creates an excitement around film. And the more people watching film, the more people will go to film year round. And festivals provide that opportunity, and also to interact with people who make the films and to talk with other film lovers.
And the fact that these filmmakers are meeting for the first time too, a lot of them. I mean, it's kind of wonderful. 3 years ago, a director of a short met the lead actress in a feature. They hit it off and became friends. He cast her as the female lead in his next short, and we're doing it this year. So it's a festival can offer you that forum for artists who have never met to suddenly hit it off and interact
and come together.
Which is exciting.
Let us begin with some of the events, and you kick off very understated and quietly with an event on Wednesday, October 30th, with the one and only John Irving talking about adaptation of book to film.
Yes, specifically The Cider House Rules. We wanted to give him the choice because five of his films have novels have become films. And I think Cider House has always been a book that's particularly close to his heart. And and also he won an Oscar for it. So
right.
I think
that
it was,
helps.
It was a lot. It's also a very good film. It's also 14 years ago, so a lot of people have not seen it in quite a long time.
Right.
But it's a very striking story. Jim Shepherd, who's on our board, a very gifted writer in his own right, who teaches at Williams, is an old friend of John's. He got him to come. He's going to be moderating the Q&A with him. And they're going to be talking about adaptation at large and Cider House in particular, which I think is going to be quite an interesting discussion.
He even wrote a wonderful book about that whole experience.
Yeah, specifically about
great
that
book. Yeah, it is a great film. Book. Yeah, yeah. About what it was like to put all that together.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to start things off.
Yeah, I think so. And then I think the next night, if, as Monty Python said, something completely different, we have this duet of food movies. This happened because they were both submitted over the transom, like 3 days apart, way back in the spring. And they could not be more different. One is about this elegant event in Paris, specifically in the movie. And the other is this wacky hunt around upstate New York for the perfect buffalo chicken wing. So it seemed to me two wildly contrasting food events that would be very, very funny put together. And luckily, both directors were happy about that idea.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have a very haute cuisine movie and a very un-haute cuisine movie back to back, and then have a chicken wings tasting afterwards, which seems totally appropriate.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And that's all with one, you can do one ticket to, or a festival? How's that,
that
work?
Yes, because that's a double bill, because they're both less than full length.
Nice.
That's why it works, putting them together.
That's terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just, this is a completely off, well, actually, it's completely relevant to what we're talking about, but I hadn't planned on asking you, but I just suddenly thought of it. I was talking to a short filmmaker recently, and one of the things they said that I thought was really interesting was that they felt that often the films, when they are lumped together, somehow get lost one way or another, and we're hoping that they could be presented on their own and on their own merits, because if your placement is very important. So if you're the third film, it's a different experience than if it was the first film or if it was the last. First of all, do you buy that? Second of all, do you think about that? And third, you know, but then how do you, you know, program for 13 minutes?
Well, you're
time?
Referring specifically to the all short slots.
Yes.
You know, most of our features have a short in front of them that in some way seems to resonate off the feature, whether in terms of subject or style or whatever.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of interesting, and I know Sandra can speak to this, about having a collage of very different experiences in one. And I find it gratifying. I think the artists do too, because when you have four or five or six of the shorts represented on stage in the Q&A, that can be very rewarding because you get comparative stories.
Yeah, the idea of, I understand a short filmmaker in that quest to have their film seen on its own.
Right.
The biggest challenge would be programming. People aren't going to come for a 13-minute film. They want to see more than that. But I think there's a lot of thought at all festivals at how they are paired and how they are put together so that they contrast and they entertain, and they do all of those things that people want to experience when they go to see a film. And it's a challenge, though, because short films haven't really found their niche in the marketplace.
Yeah.
You can watch them online, but again, that's not the same as watching it in a theater with an audience of people. So I think festivals are still trying to figure out the best way to treat short films. And we love short films. We've been showing short films for quite a while. And we always have a lot of short film makers here, which is always a joy.
Yeah, it's very gratifying. And twice in the last 3 years, the winner of our Christopher and Dana Reeve Award, which is the audience voting for their favorite short, has not only won the Reeve Award, has gone on to win the Oscar, you know, last year and 3 years ago. And the guy who made his Reeve and Oscar winner 3 years ago is coming back this year. It's because he's making his screenwriting feature debut with Birder's Guide to Everything.
Oh, that's great.
Which is very exciting. Also directed by a guy who's making his feature debut as a director who's been here twice.
And I assume that is really how a lot of this comes together of from you make these relationships and it moves from 1 year to the next. And they say, oh, you know, I'll have this in 2 years and think of me then.
They do. I think they send it in over the, you know, directly to Steve. Sometimes they'll let him know that they've got they're on their next move.
Yeah.
We've got a couple coming back that delayed their honeymoon last year to come to the film festival, and they're back again.
You have power, man.
I don't think they're delaying their first baby this time.
But they had a great time, and I think that's one of the things they get when they come to a small festival is we take very good care of them, and the conversations are great. I'm a big fan of the story behind the story.
How important is it for you, Steve, to make sure that an artist associated with a film comes with it?
For features, it's a fairly strict policy. We will not do a feature if someone doesn't come for it.
Okay.
We literally did not open with Precious 3 years ago because they couldn't promise to send anyone.
Because you want to have that conversation.
You're just seeing a movie. I mean, the movie may be wonderful. We like to think everything we do is good. But people want the stories. They want the conversation. What did it cost? What were the challenges? Where did you feel like your life is over? You know, how did you cast X or Y?
Yeah.
If you don't have those stories, it's just, okay, we just saw a movie and now we get up and leave. It's just, it's not the same experience.
And I would think that most filmmakers want to talk about it, right? That's something that they're...
Try and shut them up. I mean, you know, I say that in the nicest way possible. No, it's wonderful.
That's our motto here in the roundtable. Just try to shut them up.
No, I mean in the most
weekday mornings from 9 to noon.
I mean that affectionately, though maybe it didn't sound so. But it's great. They love the fact that nothing else is happening, as Sandra said, against them. They're not conflicting with a big starry feature in another theater. This is all that's happening at that moment. And so if you're at the festival, you're at their short.
So you mentioned Wednesday and Thursday, and those are both night events. And then on Friday, you start showing films in late morning and in the early afternoon.
Right. We show at Middleton, which is a terrific film that was submitted, starring Vera Farmiga and Andy Garcia.
Great film.
Wonderful film.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you've seen it.
I have.
Yes, yeah. It's terrific. And they're wonderful together. It was a great pairing. I think that's going to be tremendous. And Birder's Guide, which we just talked about a few minutes ago, was one of my favorite films I've seen in recent years. The fact that two of our alumni made it is wonderful. It's about these kids chasing a supposedly extinct duck, you know, and the less than altruistic adults who are also chasing the extinct duck. Very, very charming, funny movie. And then we had this film about, indirectly, the Beatles called Good Old Frida, which is quite wonderful, which Sandra sort of brought to our attention.
I actually watched it at two different festivals I attended. I saw it twice. It's a lovely story about Frida, who became the Beatles secretary when she was just 17. And most of the people in her life now, and she's in her 60s, had no clue that that was part of her life.
Right.
She never revealed it to her
family,
some of her close family, her friends, and she's still a secretary. And it's really a sweet, sweet story.
The interviews I've seen with her and the clips of the film just look delightful, beautiful.
It's
a really cool story.
And she's so lovely on film. She's one of those people that I just wanted to hear more from her.
And McCartney and Ringo Starr endorsed the making of the film. You know,
yes, they're very pleased to see.
Yes, all these years later, she never told, she never tattled, and she still doesn't.
Yeah, she never made a cent off anything of her association with the Beatles.
Yeah, I remember her being asked about, did she have any memorabilia or things to hold on to? And she said, well, even if I did, which I don't, I wouldn't do anything with it.
She was one of their biggest fans. Yeah. It's very sweet.
Really terrific stuff. And then more shorts. And then you're going to have a discussion on making movies in the Berkshires, which is
we exciting. Are. We have three films made in the Berkshires?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them featuring Treat Williams, who is coming down for the lunch seminar, which would be a lot of fun. And then we had this film called Skating to New York, for which we are doing the American premiere, about these Canadian kids, this group of friends, who decide on the spur of the moment to literally skate across frozen Lake Ontario, in the middle, which is 22 miles. That's quite a skate.
Good luck.
And, of course, what begins as a lark turns into sort of an endurance contest and a test of friendship and leadership and so on. Yeah, exactly.
And the director is a cinematographer who was the cinematographer for Pretty Woman back in the day. And I believe this is his directorial debut.
I think it is, yeah. Right.
And it's beautifully shot.
And then we have a late addition to the schedule, a documentary called Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia, which did very well at Tribeca. And if you know anything about Gore Vidal, the title is perfect because he's this brilliant, contentious, outrageous self all through this movie.
Is the film as bitter as he is?
It's bitter and very funny.
Yeah.
It's really funny. But how many people could write, you know, these distinguished historical books like Burr and Lincoln and Myra Breckinridge?
Yes.
Or work for MGM and run for Congress? You know what I mean? And be friends with Tennessee Williams and the Kennedys and Eleanor Roosevelt and a bitter enemy of William F. Buckley.
A fascinating life, certainly multifaceted.
Yes, yes.
Very
yes,
interesting.
Terrific.
And then Sunday.
Sunday, we begin with a film I enjoyed very much at Tribeca with Justin Long called A Case of You. Justin Long plays a young, struggling, of course, writer, falls in love with this girl, can't seem to woo her in conventional ways, and at the suggestion of his roommate, tries to match all the likes in her Facebook profile, none of which he's good at. He cannot rock climb. He can't ballroom dance. He doesn't read Kierkegaard, all of which are her favorite things.
Yes.
So it's very amusing watching his inept efforts to try and live up to this alter ego he's created.
And Justin, very familiar in Williamstown.
Justin, indeed. Yeah, one reason.
Fan favorite.
Yeah,
it's terrific.
Fan favorite.
And then we're closing with a Berkshire film called Cherry Cottage. Janet, why don't you talk about that for a second?
Well, Cherry Cottage is made by Dave Simons, and it's about one of the Berkshire cottages, one of the houses on one of the Berkshire cottages' lands that is being renovated back to the original state. And it tells the story of the cottage and the history that has passed through there.
Over 230 years.
Ephraim Williams, who is yes. associated with Williams College, his sister owned the property at one point. Lincoln has passed through the gates, and all of these historical figures had
Hopkins
an association.
Mark Hopkins was born there, later president of Williams.
With this house. And it's another interesting tale of the Berkshires, and it also connects kind of the county is a large county. It's North and South County, and it brings the county together kind of through the lens of this historic house.
It's Cherry Cottage. We're out of time, but I want to remind you that the Williamstown Film Festival's 15th season gets underway next Wednesday and continues through November 3rd. You can find out more information by going to WilliamstownFilmFest.com, WilliamstownFilmFest.com. Steve Lawson, Joe Finnegan, and Sandra Thomas, thank you very much for being with us. Have a wonderful, wonderful festival, and thank you for sharing.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.